This meeting is now being recorded.
This meeting is now being recorded. I want to welcome everybody formally to this conference call meeting in the Montana Board of Regents. This is a significant time of the academic year as students and faculty and staff transition from the completion of a successful fall semester and launch forward toward an exciting spring. Across the Montana University system, there are literally thousands of amazing teaching and learning and research success stories happening right now. On behalf of this board, I want to thank the students and faculty and staff who are working so hard to make this academic year a productive and memorable one. And now to the business of this board meeting. We have a concise and very straightforward agenda today. The consent agenda includes staff items and labor agreements that all contain the equitable, consistent wage and salary adjustments that we have discussed at length at earlier meetings. Since last September, the board has approved labor agreements and expressed support for consistent compensation adjustments for faculty, staff, professional, and administrative employees across the system. Those wage and salary adjustments are 50 cents per hour for classified staff and 2% for salaried faculty, professional, and administrative employees. Because the board has chosen to apply the raises equitably and consistently to all employee groups, the staff items that appear on the consent agenda today are necessary because any adjustment for these positions are subject to board approval. The timing of these raises is also consistent with state government's employee pay plan. Employees across Montana's executive, legislative, and judicial branches are receiving pay increases this month and again in January 2017. As a function of the legislatively approved state pay plan. The action agenda today includes three items that we will hear about in more detail momentarily. The first item seeks authorization for UM to purchase a pair of electric transit buses to serve students, faculty, staff, and visitors to that campus. The second action item seeks authorization for UM to sell a small piece of land, approximately one-third of an acre, near Fort Missoula to the Army Corps of Engineers. The third and final item seeks authorization for Montana Tech to expand a dorm planning process. Following consideration of these action items, the agenda will move to public comment, followed by an executive session for discussion of honorary doctorate degree nominations. Following adjournment of this meeting, we will continue our tradition of listening to campus staff senate representatives over lunch. Thanks again to everyone who has taken time to be on today's call, and I look forward to seeing everyone in person at our March meeting at UM. And with the conclusion of my remarks, we are now at the point in the agenda where it would be appropriate for a motion to approve the minutes of the November 19th and 20th meeting and the December 4th special conference call.
So moved.
You've heard the motion. Is there any conversation or discussion by members of the board, by campuses, or the public? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have. Commissioner's report. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, we don't have a report. The campus reports have been posted to the agenda, and we can look at them there. I think in the essence of time on the conference call, we will hold any other commissioner sort of reports and conversation until the March meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, all the campuses, for compiling those reports. They are read by members of this board. We greatly appreciate your willingness to continue to provide us with those reports at every meeting that we have. We're now at that point where we have the consent agenda, and as you'll note, there are several staff items under the consent agenda. There are three labor agreements under the consent agenda, and there is one emeritus faculty nomination under the consent agenda as well. Is there any interest by any member of the board in pulling any of the consent agenda items? Ms. Sheehy?
I would like to pull the staff items from the consent agenda.
All of them?
Okay.
We will pull those and put those on the action agenda. And so with those taken off of our consent agenda, we now have three labor agreements and the emeriti faculty item. Regent Johnson.
Sure, Tuss. I'm not interested in pulling the labor agreements off, but will we have an opportunity to hear from Deputy Commissioner McCray just to give us a little feel for where we are on it? Or is this included? Are there any comments that he has relative to this? If that would be permitted.
I think it would be appropriate to perhaps have those. So in a general way, not necessarily one specific labor agreement. Is that correct? I think it would be very appropriate to approve these consent items, not pull them from the consent agenda, and then perhaps we can have the deputy commissioner talk about that particular item. Is that okay?
That would be fine.
Okay. Any further conversation by members of the board? Seeing none, all in favor of the consent agenda before us? Is there a motion?
Thank you, Chair.
There's a motion to approve the consent agenda. Regent Johnstone?
Out of a spirit of caution, I'm going to recuse myself. My son is a member on the faculty of the University of Montana, and while I don't think he's in the bargaining agreement that's affected, I think they tag him on, so I would prefer to recuse myself.
Thank you, Regent Johnstone. You've heard the motion. You've heard the motion to approve the consent agenda. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Abstentions. There is one. Thank you for that. We will now move down to the action agenda, and I think what we'll do is we'll put those items that were removed at the bottom of the action agenda. So we'll take them in the order that we currently have them. And so action item A, which is a request for authorization to purchase 2 electric transit buses and associated equipment from UM Missoula. I know that we've heard about this particular item previously, I believe at our meeting at MSU Bozeman in November. And is there any additional comments or conversations from the campus to set this up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Royce Engstrom. I'm going to ask Vice President Reed just to make a very brief comment because you did have it before you before. And then we have Jordan Hess, who is our transportation director here with us. And we have Cody Meixner, our ASUM president here with us as well to respond to any questions that you may have. So, Mike.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Tuss and members of the board. University of Montana is looking to purchase 2 electric buses. The total purchase price of these 2 buses, including the charging station, is just over $2 million. In order to do this, the university would need to debt finance approximately roughly $1.6 million, a little more than that. These buses will need to, the university student transportation service will need to replace 2 buses. We have 2 older buses in the fleet that are continually down, requiring a lot of time and maintenance. So we need to purchase 2 additional buses. By buying these electric buses, we're able to advance the goals and missions of the university, sustainability requirements, as well as better correlate ourselves with the direction that is happening with the city's Mountain Line bus service. Although the buses do have a higher upfront cost, the long-term operation and maintenance of the buses is significantly less than a diesel bus. Therefore, over the life of the buses, the university would actually save money compared to buying diesel buses. And so we are requesting the opportunity to proceed with buying the buses and incur the debt financing required. The debt financing would be paid mainly from the student transportation fee and operation revenues from ASUM Transportation. And I'll pause for any questions. And again, we do have ASUM Transportation and ASUM Student Government here to respond to any questions if you may have any.
Thank you. Regent Albrecht does have a question. Regent Albrecht.
Yes, Chair Tuss. Mr. Hess, I'm in support of this this opportunity to buy these kind of environmentally sound buses, but I'm concerned about a couple of things. First of all, I know there's been discussion about the potential of merging with the Mountain Line bus system, and I'd like to know a little bit more about the potential of that and any discussions moving forward. And I'd also like to know about the impact on with these fees, given that we're looking at a lower number of enrollment and what that might look like with the financing.
Yeah, thank you, Regent Albrecht, and Chair Tuss, members of the board. To address the question about merging with Mountain Line, you know, it's been an issue that's come up from time to time, and at this time, actually, the issue prompted the University of Montana and ASUM, in conjunction with the City of Missoula and Mountain Line, to launch a comprehensive transportation study where we looked at operational needs of both Mountain Line and ASUM moving forward, as well as are continuing to look at other parking and transportation demand management issues at the university. Several considerations about merging with Mountain Line have really indicated that it's not the best path forward at this time, but we are collaborating with Mountain Line more effectively than we ever have, and we expect that collaboration to continue and to increase over time. We've got a fantastic working relationship with Mountain Line, and just to highlight that, we completed, per the recommendations of the UM Transportation Study, the launch of our new Purple Line service, which was a joint route design with Mountain Line, which was designed to complement Mountain Line service and not duplicate existing service. We participate jointly in a local transportation demand management consortium, which is a group of service providers that get together and share ideas and planning and strategy decisions regarding transportation in the Missoula area. And we've recently applied for a federal grant to purchase 7 additional zero-emission battery electric buses over the next several years, with ASUM to receive 2 of those if the grant application is successful, and Mountain Line to receive 5 of those. We've explored operational opportunities, including fueling, washing, and maintaining our buses together. And we've worked on joint marketing and joint customer service opportunities. So we're proud to partner with Mountain Line in these ways. Nothing about this purchase precludes a future merger, and I just anticipate that relationship getting stronger and stronger. With regard to the question on enrollment, one of the benefits of the electric buses is the lower total cost of ownership. So ASUM anticipates saving significant funds over the life of the vehicle on fueling and maintenance. We anticipate the operational savings to be about $89,000 less over the life of the vehicle, and that will certainly be complementary to potentially lower enrollment numbers. We've also taken a look at what sort of, you know, obviously we don't want to cut any service. Our transit service is quite popular and quite heavily utilized, but we've taken a look at certain times of day. If we were to trim out service, how could we do that with a laser focus that could save funds but not negatively impact our riders?
Thank you. I believe that there was a question or comment perhaps from Regent Johnstone.
Blake, I think the question, most of my questions have been answered. I'm looking at the debt service coverage, and if I understand correctly, you're anticipating about $116,000 of debt service to cover the annual debt service, to cover the debt that you incurred to buy the buses. Is that correct?
Regent Johnstone, members of the board, and Chair Tustin, this is Mike Reed. And Regent Johnstone, I wasn't sure if you said 160 or 116, but the anticipated annual debt service is estimated to be $162,200 based on a 2.5% interest rate.
So two questions. One, if I look at the attachment shows the debt service coverage, you know, the coverage on the debt service is largely, almost entirely coming from anticipated fuel and repair savings, which, in my opinion, are somewhat less certain, perhaps, than the other funds for debt service. So at least in the first 5 years, it strikes me that your debt service coverage is fairly skinny. Secondly, have you locked in the terms of the loan
with the intercap so that you know for sure that your debt service will be no greater than 162?
So in answering Regent Johnson, Chair Tuss, members of the board, the second question with regards, have we locked in with the intercap loan? No, we have not. We are exploring potentially combining this debt financing with some other projects, including some capital projects with Montana Tech and with Montana Western that would actually be done through a bonding process. A lot of it just depends on how those projects come forward and the timing. The intercap loan currently is substantially lower than the 2.5%. However, that is a variable rate. And so we're trying to estimate a fairly conservative rate at the 2.5%, but that is not locked in. As for the debt service payment itself, you're correct in that the fuel savings and repair savings do make up roughly $50,000 of the debt service. The remaining debt service, there's currently $100,000 that is already being paid or is currently available that isn't contingent on the energy savings or efficiencies, as well as the historical funding and the transportation fee that was approved for increase last year that takes place in FY17. And then the bus storage facility, that debt service currently just under $27,000 expires in FY20, which will also provide a little bit of margin. So the first year, FY16, they certainly, if we were to do that today, they don't have the capacity to cover the debt for that first year. But moving forward in FY17 and beyond, they actually grow in a stronger position as time moves forward.
Will you have, before you sign an agreement to buy the buses, will you have the debt locked in so that you have the funds to pay for the cost of the buses?
It's a good question, Regent Johnstone. Chair Tuss and members of the board. To do the intercap loan, we would have to put in our request to receive that financing, which would be sometime in March. They only review that quarterly. So March would be the first opportunity we have to lock that in. And I think that timing is fairly close with the deadline that ASUM Transportation has in order to confirm the buses. So we'll have to look at those dates. I don't think I could answer definitively right now. It's close, but I don't know the exact dates of when those two time frames have to match up.
I guess from my perspective, I would be concerned if you signed a contract before you have absolute assurance that you have the funding to pay for the costs. So.
Yeah.
There was a question or comment from Regent Nystuen.
Thank you. Good morning. Last time we got together, we were in Bozeman. I was concerned about the optics of purchase of a $2 million bus package at a time when the University of Montana struggles with its challenges in staffing and the whole financial situation there. And since then, I've received plenty of communications showing that this is a student enterprise, that this is something that the students have advocated for. They largely manage a big part of this, and so I would like to make sure that we acknowledge that it's a result of that, and it's not because of the coming out of general funding of the University of Montana and so forth, that this is a transportation enterprise that I think is very important. Second thing is I too am supportive of any type of collaboration with the Mountain Lion Service in Missoula to continue to operate the two bus entities, if possible, into one, looking for the synergies between them and so forth. The third thing is, while I'm supportive of this, I note that the intercap, it's noted that there's intercap financing or other debt financing structure has permitted. And being a commercial banker, if that is something that our company would choose to do, I probably should abstain from the actual vote on this with the potential that maybe there's an opportunity somewhere along the line of our company or another bank or something like that was interested in this. So, but I am of the purchase. So thank you.
Thank you, Regent. Nice to meet you. Any additional comments or questions?
Yeah.
Regent
Allen. He can go, Mr. President.
President Angstrom, was that you?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I wanted to request ASUM President Cody Meister if he could just add a word here.
Chair Tuss, members of the board, this is Cody Meister. I did want to comment briefly on the student involvement piece and the student enterprise piece that Regent Nystuen touched on. This is a very unique organization around the country. For ASUM to have electric buses will be probably the third college in the country. And to claim student ownership of this enterprise is really something that's unique to UM and I think the state of Montana and the university system here as a whole. So I wanted to thank Regent Nystuen for your comments. They are very insightful and spot on with the student involvement that these kinds of projects can help help spur at UM. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Regent Holland.
Mr. Chair, because much of this was directive and push during my last year as ASUM president, I'll abstain from the vote, but I do support it, obviously. And I think it's as Cody was alluding to, really a student initiative, and it's what students want. And in terms of enrollment, I think it'll actually help. One of our biggest pushes at UM is sustainability, and that's what students come for. So I hope for that reason we can support it.
Thank you, Regent Holman. I'm not sure. I mean, certainly it would be up to you if you want to abstain from this vote. I'm unsure that you need to do that, but that would be up to you.
Great. In that case, I won't.
Are there additional comments or questions from this board? Additional? Yes. Regent Lozar?
Chairman Tuss, you know, I also had a few people talk to me about the optics on a $2 million purchase and the budget at the University of Montana. And I just wanted to make a point that I know we can't get caught up on short-term budgeting, and I think this is the type of thing that we need to be doing more often at our campuses, looking at our long-term budgets and how we can reduce costs from the long-term perspective. So I really appreciated the sort of layout and the consciousness of long-term budgeting.
Additional comments or questions from this board? Is there a motion to approve this item?
So moved.
It's been moved by Regent Sheehy. And at this point, I would ask if there is any additional comments from this board, from the campuses, or the public. Are there additional comments or questions? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Are there any abstentions?
I abstain.
There is one abstention that's noted. Thank you. Let's move
Thank
on
you, Mr.
now.
Chair.
Action item B, which is also an item from the University of Montana, request for authorization of sale of Fort Missoula property. President Angstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'll turn to Vice President Reed to give you just a brief synopsis of this item.
Thank you, Chair Tuss, members of the board. The University of Montana was contacted by the Army Corps of Engineers requesting that we sell them 0.36 acres immediately west of the Fort Missoula Cemetery. The market price that their studies proposed was $4,000 for the 0.46 acres. In talking with Nick Robinson at the time, we felt that that was represented a fair price for the property and given the study that they had put into it. Probably the piece that attachment number two, if you have that, shows where this property is. It's section 107C, and basically there's so many easements and right-of-ways, and the proximity of this piece of property next to the cemetery, this property basically is of no value to the university. There's nothing that we would be able to do on this property either currently or in the future, and so we are supportive of the request from the Army Corps of Engineers to transfer this property to them and bring that forward to you for your approval.
Thank you for that explanation. Comments or questions from the board?
I would move approval of the request.
Approval has been moved by Regent Johnstone. Are there any additional comments or questions from the board? Regent Johnstone.
I just had one perhaps for council. Could
we've gone through all the appropriate steps to ensure that we'd have the authority to sell the property?
We have, and we checked with DNRC. It's not trust land property, so it doesn't have to go to the landlord. Thank you.
Additional questions or comments from the board? Seeing none, are there any additional comments from campuses or the public? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion by Regent Johnstone, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Action item C, which is a request for authorization to proceed to design development phase of a Living Learning Center at Montana Tech. Chancellor Blackader.
Yes, sir. Chair Tusk, members of the board. This item follows the approval of a dormitory, or the approval of authority to design a dormitory that we were given in 2011. And since that time, the project has been expanded to include some auxiliary buildings that would be funded by private funds. We've raised about $3.2 million towards that project. What we are requesting is authority to use gift money to do the design portion of the auxiliary buildings and to continue with the design on a dormitory building. This is probably going to be a phased project where we build the dormitory part of the Living Learning Center fairly soon, assuming approval, and then move into phases with the auxiliary portions that would be funded by gift money. So the request is to be able to split the gift money and the money that we have authority to spend on design based upon square footage of the two portions of the project. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Chancellor. Questions for members of the board. Regent Sheehy.
Can you explain what the auxiliary buildings are?
The auxiliary portion of the building, they're still under design, but they would include a ballroom, which we need, an auxiliary gym, and collaborative learning space that would be attached directly to the dorm so that the dorm residents could directly access those facilities.
Regent Sheehy.
What's collaborative living space, learning space? Is that meeting rooms, conference rooms?
Meeting rooms, conference rooms. There'll be some kitchens in there where students can come in and, you know, have a meal or something if they wanted to on their own. It's likely there'd be a food court of some kind in there that would have food for that west end of our campus. They could potentially be used even for classrooms, although they're being paid for with private funds.
Thanks.
Additional questions? Regent Johnstone.
Just to confirm that, so all we're asking today is to approve the expenditure of funds for the design portion. You will come back to us to request authority to proceed with the construction and funding. So is that, I understand correctly?
Absolutely.
That is my understanding. Chancellor Blackader.
That is true. That is true, Mr. Chair.
Additional comments or questions from members of the board? Seeing none, is there a motion on this item?
So moved.
Regent Albrecht has moved this particular action item. Are there additional comments from members of the board or from campuses or the public on this item? Any additional comments? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And the action item is approved. We will now head to the new action item, which are the staff items that were on the consent agenda, and those are staff items A through H. Regent Sheehy, do you want to?
I have questions.
Oh, I figured you did. Where's yours?
As you stated in your opening remarks, Chair, we have discussed normal raises, and I see that the reason for almost all of the raises in this is normal. That's our reason for giving raises, normal advances. But I think these aren't normal times. And in light of the job cuts that we've inflicted on the system and or have been inflicted on us, depending on how you look at it, I think we have to at least discuss whether cross-the-board raises are the proper thing to do at this time as a system, whether we discuss that campus by campus or whether we talk about it as a system, and whether administrative pay freeze is something we should be thinking about in light of November's revision to the plan at U of M. I'd like to hear what my fellow regents think about giving normal raises during a period of time which I would characterize as not being a normal period for the university system, given the job cuts that we've had in the past couple of months for our plan.
Comments? Additional comments?
Chair Tuss, thank you. I don't have a proposal, but I have some concern that Regent Sheehy has raised. Would be interested in the thoughts of the regents if they have any on the issue.
Okay, so this is my first go-round of the working with this Chair Tuss and members of other regents. Coming out of the private sector, what we tend to do, at least in the organization I work with and others, is generally look at a percentage increase. A lot of times it's driven based off inflation for annual raises and budgeting purposes and so forth. Inflation, as we know it, is supposed to be, somewhere around in the 1% area, but, it just seems to cost more to live in spite of fuel prices and a number of things like that. But the number that I am accustomed to is around 3% per year. But that doesn't mean everybody gets 3% across the board. Generally, higher performers will get 5%. Those that didn't measure up may only get a one-time-only type of pay increase and so forth. So that's kind of the world that I'm familiar with. I guess in light of the economic times here, what I don't want to do is just single out a particular campus, and then the rest of them have to go with that as well. There are some of the campuses that are doing exceedingly well, and there is some performers at some of the campuses I know that are truly doing some outstanding things and are probably deserving of possibly additional higher raises than just a standard 2% normal increase and so forth. So I guess I'm learning as we go here a little bit from my perspective, just bringing in some of the pay practices that we're familiar with from private industry. So I personally don't see a big concern about is 2% too much at this time here. But it clearly could be as we start looking at statewide what's happening with budget, commodity prices, the impact of some of the energy and some things like that. I think we're headed into a different legislative year a year from now based on what's happening within the state here. So while I'm okay with the 2% right now, I'm not so sure that going forward here that that ought to be the norm. That what we did in 2016, we did 2. Why aren't we doing that? For the time being, I'm okay with it.
Maybe I could ask a question of Deputy Commissioner McGray. Given that we have a relatively new board, if you will, Regent Nystuen had just talked about this is the first time that, this particular item has come before him in his tenure on this board. Could you talk very briefly, Kevin, about is this traditionally, I guess the time of year that we see these things, and also the content of what we see in front of us. Is it very normal, your history with the system and what we've done in the past? Could you talk a little bit about that?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One factor or condition that is a little bit different is the timing this time around. So normally, the normal wage and salary increases in the university system since 1994 have occurred on October 1st, unless there is a pay freeze, a state pay freeze. But normally, they're October 1 instead of January 1. So the university system, every 2 years, working with the governor, working with the legislature, seeks and pursues an appropriation in state employee pay plan funding that is not unlike the way the pay plan is put together for non-university system employees. So that's what we did in the last session in 2015. We were advocates for a state employee pay plan for faculty, staff, professional, and administrative employees, and we received an appropriation for funding. And that appropriation partially funds the proposed raises for faculty, for staff, for contract professional, and for contract administrative employees. This time around, I mentioned that the timing is different. That's because the legislature, in its pay plan that it implemented for all state employees except for the university system, they implemented raises in January this month, and then January again next year. Our interest,
though, Kevin, you might want to touch on that. Normal would have been
October
of 2015. Actually, delayed it 2 months. They're not accelerating it.
Oh, correct. Yeah, so that's a delay. I'm sorry. The January is a delay, so it's 3 months later than normal. So all state employees in all three branches of government are receiving raises this month and next month. That's delayed 3 months from the normal calendar. Raises that you see before you on these staff items. So as we've been talking since September and through November, your staff has been engaging in collective bargaining, faculty and staff unions. And the agreements that we've been bringing back to the board for approval at the September and the November meetings for classified hourly staff has been for 50 cents per hour, effective January this month and January next month. That's delayed by 3 months, according to this. And similarly, as you heard the presentation, our faculty agreements that we've ratified and that you've approved have been for largely 2% adjustments. In some cases, maybe a little bit more, depending on the faculty's base salary. But 2% has been the agreement that you've been approving for contract employees cents per hour for classified hourly staff. The reason that these staff items on the agenda appear before you is because of a function of the category of the employee. And it is because the Board of Regents has chosen to retain the authority to approve the hiring of certain administrators and certain staff members and to delegate to the commissioner the authority to approve the hire for all other contract professionals and administrators. So we have approximately 1,100 non-faculty contract professional and administrative employees throughout the system. You have delegated to the commissioner, the board has delegated to the commissioner the authority to hire, approve the hiring and approve salary adjustments for about 1,000 out of those 1,100. The other 100 or so that appear before you are under policy because they are either commissioner staff, presidents, vice presidents, chancellors, vice chancellors. So this list of employees and job titles and their salaries that are on the staff items before you does not appear before you because they are, we're purporting that they are the highest paid employees in the system or necessarily the highest level. By that I mean we have some faculty in the system who in a year will earn more than some of the administrators who are on the list before you. We have a lot of deans in the system who in a given year will earn more than most administrators who are on this list before you. This list is in front of you simply because this is the group of positions that are subject to your approval for hire and contract amendments. We have never chosen, the board has never chosen in the past to vary normal salary and wage increase across campuses based on either enrollment fluctuations or budget fluctuations. So you have approved thus far contracts for faculty and staff without regard to which campus they're on and without regard to what their budget situation is. It's been 50 cents an hour for the classified staff, 2% for the contract professionals. I think that's all I can retain from what you asked me to provide, Mr. Chairman. If I left anything out, let me know.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. That's a wonderful explanation. I appreciate that history. Are there additional questions on this board about this?
I think we're kind of getting to the nugget of my problem. This is something that we've done normally, that we've done routinely, and I don't think that we're in a normal time. And I think it's I think the people on these lists, we've retained the authority over their over the approval of their salaries for a reason. It's so we could exercise that duty to look at it. And in looking at it, in light of the recent job cuts, I think that the board should consider an across-the-board reduction in the amount or a complete not raise. If we don't do that, I think we should at least look at our three highest paid employees, the commissioner and the two presidents, because we have protected them against the vagaries of the market by giving them the $500,000 bonus for longevity pay. So that's one thing we could consider is, in light of the cuts, I think we should do something to establish that we bear some of this as well as administrators of the system. And I agree that it should be system-wide. I would look at a reduction in the increase or a freeze system-wide. But short of that, I think we have to look at the people that we've given another benefit to for longevity pay and consider. It actually kind of surprises me that this is going through as normal, because it seems to me that this isn't a normal time. So I think we have to discuss a signal and a budgetary acknowledgement of the fact that we're all in this together. And we can stand up and say that about U of M and about what's happening at MSU Billings, but it should be reflected in our budget as well as those of the campuses. So that's my thing. I think we need to have a reduction in this increase or no increase at all. And if we want to do it system-wide, I would support that. But otherwise, I think we should at least talk about the president.
Thank you, Regent Sheehy. Regent Johnstone.
Well, as I indicated, I'm somewhat sympathetic to this. And to me, it's not so much an issue of the dollars. It's an issue of the state leadership, I think. I would not be supportive of an across-the-board freeze with respect to all these people on the list, because I think virtually most of these people are not in positions of leadership where they can be. I'd have trouble distinguishing between most of these people and faculty members and other people who've gotten a 2% increase. I couldn't support that. But I do think it's worth considering whether it's as a statement relative to the overall system, whether the leadership should assume some modest responsibility. They obviously have responsibility, but some modest statement of support or acknowledgement that there is significant pressure on at least one of our major, two of our units that's impacting faculty members and other people.
Thank you, Regent Johnstone. Additional comments from the board? Additional questions from the board? Regent Lozar.
Chair Tess, so, you know, being this is my first meeting, I'm compelled to say a few things, but, you know, not having an overall sense of financial health of the entire system, it's really hard for me to make a decision on a system-wide approach or a university approach. But I think one of the things that I struggle with these types of conversations is how are individuals who are particularly on this list being assessed on their individual performance, because that could be another way to look at it. You can look at it university-wide, or system-wide, university-wide, or individual-wide. And so I think maybe it's not appropriate for this particular conversation, but a conversation moving forward, how we look at overall performance for this classification of our folks and how that might apply to a process when we have this conversation in, you know, 2 years from now.
Regent Sheehy.
I want to make clear that the reason that I suggest something system-wide is that we've chosen to do a system-wide raise, not based on performance. And that I don't think that we should be pulling out people for performance, including U of M or MSU billing, because that's not how the raise is given. So my reaction to the raise is based on the fact that it's not performance-based, that it's a normal increase based on, I guess, economic factors and what we were able to get on the appropriation and all of those things. So I agree with you that there are ways to do this on a performance-based manner. That's not what I'm suggesting, because that's not the way the raise was given. And the only reason I suggest, you know, discussion of at least some alternate to that is because in the normal course of events, we've paid three of our employees differently with a guarantee for longevity, which it appears that all of them will acquire. And so for that's the reason that I pulled them out. But my whole thing here is this isn't performance-based raise, so I don't think we should get into the performance. That's why I'm looking at more of a system-wide acknowledgement as opposed to U of M or MSU billings.
Chairtess, Deputy Commissioner McCray, could you speak to the 2%? Is that based on inflation, or how do you come up with the 2%?
Mr. Chairman, Regent Albrecht, the 2% was arrived at in collaboration with campuses from a fiscal standpoint and what campuses had been budgeting for and anticipating. The 2% versus the 50 cents an hour for classified employees is also kind of a remnant of a feature or an aspect that past boards and commissioner has applied in our pay strategies, where the average classified employee will get it's unusual to have a cents per hour raise. More often than not, it's a percentage. So for the 50 cents per hour this time around, the classified staff on average will be receiving a raise of larger than 2%, which we have viewed as something that we actually desire. And the 2% then was arrived at with the concept that an across-the-board percentage, because we're not talking about hourly employees, we're talking about contract salaried. For non-faculty, it's one-year term contract employees. So a percentage that was equitable across the board that was affordable to the campuses.
So it's, it's not a cost-of-living-based percentage increase per se.
Mr. Chairman, Regent Albrecht, I have heard it referred to not only by you, but by other people or in your question. Some people call it a cost of living because some people equate a percentage raise applied across an organization's workforce in a given year or consecutive years as cost of living. We, neither in the university system nor in my prior career at the Department of Administration, when we implemented pay plans on a percentage basis, Your compensation analyst will not call those a cost of living raise, because a cost of living raise actually, in my term and my speak, is based on actually a CPI analysis and also maybe some other factors that go into your workforce's costs and expenditures. So this is just a normal across the board percentage raise, recognizing that not only are costs of living going up, but our faculty and staff salaries across the system are behind comparable employers. So the president's salary at the University of Montana and Montana State University is about 72% of the national average. That's pretty close to what our full professor's salary is as well. So when you know that the full professor salary is approximately 72% of the national average, the assistant or the associate professor salary is probably about 80% of the national average, and the assistant professor salary is about 90% of the national average. One way of looking at this, if you want to look at it that way, your president's salaries are comparable to your full professor salaries from a compa ratio standpoint, from a market perspective. That's another way that we look at it from a compensation analysis. Not so much cost of living, but in recognition that our salaries are already behind, we can assume that costs do go up every year from a cost of living upon the workforce.
Commissioner Christian?
I would touch on this concept of performance-based a bit. Regent Nystuen mentioned it in his opening comments and Regent Lozar's question. I think that's a very good one, one that with my background I favor as well. I will tell you that we actually looked at this in some length over the course of the summer, how possible that is, and I haven't lost the thread on continuing that conversation. There are some challenges with it, I will tell you, in a public entity versus a private. It's certainly, from my world, that's exactly how we did it. One thing about it, as we then announce those raises, we will speak to those individual persons' performance, and we've got some privacy and confidentiality issues that we would need to deal with. I think in conversations with the presidents, we certainly don't want this to be arbitrary, so we would have to kind of lay out what those performance measures would be well in advance of earning those. So it's a concept that I very much support at, again, sort of the highest level. I think maybe it's deans up or maybe it's vice presidents up, something along those lines. I think that's a discussion that's still ongoing and that I would be interested in continuing. So I don't want to dismiss that. I think on advice from legal and others, we said that's probably not doable in this go-around. Some of what have arrived at for the system over the last 6 months was based on kind of guidance set out by you all as a board at our May meeting in terms of where we think we're going, certainly not specifically to individuals, but as a system, and that's sort of what's guided the bargaining process and the negotiation with non-bargained employees. And so, you know, we haven't left that behind, but we're not there yet in terms of that conversation. But I think that's a great question, a great suggestion, and we're working to see if we could embed that some way. And if we can, we'd certainly bring that to you all as a board soon. So we would build it into the process for the next couple of years of the biennium.
Thank you, Commissioner. Additional comments from members of the board? Commissioner Sheehy.
Deputy Commissioner McCray, what did the state workers increase?
Mr. Chairman, Regent Sheehy, the pay plan was for 50 cents per hour, January and January.
Across the board, regardless of salary? Or?
That's correct.
So those would have been much less than 2% at the highest salary?
50 cents an hour would be less than 2% for everyone above 50,000. And when we knew that we would have difficulty getting collective bargaining agreements with people above 50,000 in the system, yes.
So the state workers didn't get a 2% raise?
Correct.
Some did, some didn't.
Yeah. Thanks for doing the math. 50,000 and above did not. Okay.
Additional comments or questions from the board? Additional comments or questions? Seeing none, is there a motion on the floor? We do not have a motion at this point.
I do have questions about a couple of the individual items, not about the general.
Oh, okay.
I think it's important with the non-normal raises to understand the basis for those raises. And I think I understand from the note why Deputy Commissioner Seck, his increase is 8.8%, but I'd like to hear the rationale for that. What duties he's assuming in?
Deputy Commissioner McCray may be able to fill us in more on the details, but as you probably recall, we used to have two deputy commissioners in the academic side of the house, one for two-year education, one for four and above. Neil Moisey held that position before. We have decided that we would restructure that position, essentially eliminating one of the deputy commissioners, and ultimately the net result of that will be tremendous cost savings to this office and this budget, and reassign some of those duties to Deputy Commissioner Seck, which he is readily accepted and candidly doing a great job with since that transition was, what, May or June. And then also we strengthened the position that Elizabeth Turnus now holds to handle some of the more routine aspects of that position with regard to the academic programming, something you'll hear more about as the day goes on, but the campus compliance with those. So we and that position existed before in some regard, but has been increased, the responsibility. So we basically eliminated one position, increased the responsibilities of two others. Deputy Commissioner Sachs is, of course, before you because of the nature of his employment. But ultimately, the net savings of that is significant, both in an FTE, the benefits that are associated with it, a total dollar cost with those positions. So the increase to the two doesn't come close to what the cost of a deputy commissioner was to this office.
With respect to the Director of American Indian and Minority Achievement, that's a new hire, but it's my understanding that the position is now paid substantially more than the last hire. Could you explain that?
I let Deputy Commissioner McCray. He worked closely with that and chaired the committee that ultimately worked that search.
Yes. Commissioner Regent Sheehy, the former Director of American Indian and Minority Achievement, when she notified us that she would be leaving at the end of the year, we were also in the middle of some of this academic affairs staffing planning, that because we knew at the time that we were not going to be replacing, as the commissioner had already notified the board at that time, our plan was not to replace the Deputy Commissioner of Academic Research and Student Affairs. So if one Deputy Commissioner who used to be Deputy Commissioner for two-year and community college education is going to take on additionally the responsibility for the system's academic research and student affairs enterprise with the proposed 8% adjustment that's before you there, we also knew that in just tossing the complete academic research and student affairs piece of the enterprise to one person, that one person was probably going to need a little bit of staffing help as well. So when we knew that the former AIMA director was leaving, we reconfigured the position. It's now the Director of American Indian Minority Achievement and K-12 partnerships, and we made some substantial changes to that position. The K-12 partnerships piece is a responsibility to be commissioner's at least first go-to person in our liaison with Office of Public Instruction, Board of Public Education, and any other K-12 at least system relations that we have, so that the deputy commissioner is not the first person on deck who has to be involved with the mechanics of those relations. We also relieved the deputy of a couple of direct reports. Previously, he supervised two directors, the director of the Federal Gear Up Program, that's gaining early awareness and readiness for academic programs, undergraduate programs, and then ETS, our Educational Talent Search. Those are two federal programs that are all about increasing educational opportunity and access, who used to report to the deputy commissioner, who now report to the AIMA K-12 partnership. So essentially the position was reconfigured when it was vacant and before we advertised to kind of transition from AIMA director to AIMA plus K-12 and direct supervision of two directors and their grant programs. That then, in our salary analysis from a human resources perspective, culminated in a salary range adjustment. We advertised at a salary range of desired range of 82,000 to 92,000. We received 20 applications nationwide, good applications. We interviewed three finalists. And the top candidate was an individual who, far and away above all the other applicants and all the other finalists, has established working relationships with all the tribal councils, all the tribal ed, and all the tribal college leaders. And the any other candidate does not have that, and we knew that we would have had to have spent a good part of the next year or two taking the new director around the state and introducing him or her to those vital partners that are an essential function of this position. So at the point that we were ready to extend an offer, we found ourselves in the same situation that we always are. We hope that we can land the talent and the capable person we need for the range that we've advertised, at least as our desired range. But we recognize when we advertise that desired range, that's just the employer who's going out on the market unilaterally saying that's the range we would like to hire at. We always end up in the delicate negotiations with the individual as to what would they be comfortable making that commitment to us for and changing their life and coming to work for us. And if we're not able to land that individual, then how much further behind might our organization be within the next tier of candidates? We fortunately were able to attract the person who we felt was the top candidate, who had all of the qualifications and experiences that I just mentioned, at the salary level that is before you in this proposed hire.
Follow-up. It sounds to me like the increase in the salary for this position is based in part upon assumption of new duties, much like Commissioner Zach.
Yes, all the way up to that $92,000.
Okay, and then an additional amount in order to land the employee that you wanted.
Yes.
What was the previous salary for the non-reconfigured?
For the AMA alone was approximately $72,000.
And so for the assumption of new duties, assuming that that went up to 92, you do the math, what was the percentage increase there?
I have to do the math on that.
But you
Yes, right.
Did the math and figured that was what the assumption of duties was worth?
Yes, and within our staffing as well, talking about available budget, like I mentioned, it all fits into the piece of staffing, the academic research and student affairs part of our enterprise.
Breen Albright.
No, I just, I mean, my,
oh, sorry.
I to end our discussion, that's within, I want you to know that that's within your discretion. I mean, I don't feel that that's my business as far as how you come to the figures. I just wanted to know how the analysis was conducted to come to that figure, given the large increase between the old position and the new hire.
Chair, clarifying question. It's my understanding when you look at where we were traditionally with the previous positions, that if you take this away and add back in those other deputy commissioner positions, that we actually end up with somewhat either breaking even or somewhat of a cost savings, given that we are not replacing those traditional positions that were there before. So because you had, is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Regent Albrecht, yes, that's accurate.
And significant savings. I think it's, I don't know the numbers, but you're talking about with benefits, a couple $100,000 position for a deputy commissioner. We've added 15, 30, and 20. So, I mean, it's an 80, well, I think it's $100,000 savings for the overall budget. And part of when we build the budget overall, it's finding, I mean, not only trying to figure out how to treat individuals within that structure fairly, but overall structural balance of the budget and how those pieces will work.
Well, and I would say that this is also when you have those kind of vacancies and you're looking at bringing in the best resources, the best staff, the best personnel, that this is an opportunity to reconfigure. And it, I am very much in support of of how you've reconfigured these, and I think it makes a lot more sense, and certainly moving forward with Deputy Commissioner Seck with your duties moving forward. So thanks for all your work on all of these respectively.
Not to cut the conversation short, but I guess in the spirit of that, I've always taken that good people don't cost you money. They produce a good return on investment. And I think across the board, we've got a group of people that I think are deserving of a 2% normal raise as done here, knowing that there's always room for improvement to the process that we go through to do that. I certainly acknowledge Regent Sheehy's comments about we're in unsettled times these days. I just think that at this point in time, I would make the motion that we approve the consent agenda items A through H with the raises as noted here.
Heard the motion by Regent Nystuen. Is there additional comments from the board? Are there additional comments from the campuses or the public? Additional comments? Hearing none, in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The ayes have it. Thank you. If we could now, I want to get back to the earlier comment and question the Regent Johnstone had. If you don't mind, Deputy Commissioner McRae, if I could turn the microphone over to you to talk a little bit about the labor agreements and how we're doing on that front, I would really appreciate that.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. So the labor agreements on today's agenda consist of the collective bargaining agreement between the Board of Regents and the University of Montana faculty on the main campus, also then another bargaining unit for the University of Montana's Missoula College, and then the third one on today's agenda is the bargaining agreement with the laborers union, which largely represents custodial and food service employees in Bozeman and in Billings. These agreements are consistent with the 9 other agreements that the board has approved, or actually 10 other agreements that the board has approved thus far, with 50 cents per hour for hourly staff effective January and January, 50 cents for contract faculty January and January. We are as a system. We have if you approve this today, you will have approved and we will have settled with 13 of the 25 collective bargaining units in the system, but large units. So we have reached settlements with 13 of 25 labor organizations, but they cover 3,600 of the 4,000 employees in unionized positions. So 90% of our unionized workforce we have agreements with. Where we are still bargaining in good faith and making progress, items or areas and units of note, Northern, Western faculty at both of those campuses, operating engineers, custodial and plant maintenance staff, electricians, carpenters, painters, graduate assistants in Bozeman. Those would be probably the areas of note that make up the majority of those remaining 400 of our 4,000. Where we don't have agreements yet, but we're bargaining is productive, and we anticipate we'll bring back more agreements to you in March for approval.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Regent Johnson.
So if and when those agreements are reached, the pay increases will be retroactive January 1.
Mr. Chairman, Regent Johnstone, retroactivity is a mandatory subject of bargaining, so I technically cannot guarantee or say yes, because it's a subject of bargaining, but we have never, the board has never, to my knowledge, approved a bargaining agreement that did not have retroactivity to the regular implementation date in it. So,
in cases in which there are members of a of a unit that are not a part of a collective bargaining agreement, but where, as I understand it, historically we've applied the same salary increases. Is that occurring now?
Has occurred. Mr. Chairman, Regent Johnstone, yes. The instructions have gone out to the campus consistent with our discussions thus far to prepare for those adjustments, load them in payroll.
So in an instance, for example, at Northern, are there employees at that campus, whether faculty or not, that are not subject to collective bargaining, and are they for waiting to get their pay increases until that collective bargaining contract has been resolved?
Chairman Regent Johnstone, they are not waiting. This is part of the kind of the delicate balance every 2 years about how our pay decisions come together. We weave in the bargaining piece, we weave in the board's considerations. So at Northern, for example, where we have the classified staff bargaining agreement settled, they'll be getting their 50 cents per hour this month. Faculty, we're still bargaining, but then all of the non-unionized classified staff and contract professionals are loaded in payroll for the 50 cents or the 2%. They won't get the paycheck for January until February, but it is proceeding, yes.
That's the 1,000 of the 1,100 that Kevin spoke of earlier that are administratives or professional staff that are part of the group that is delegated to this office, and those will move forward.
I certainly want to respect the collective bargaining process, but it's frankly, I'm a little puzzled by why it's taking this long. I mean, does anybody believe that there's really flexibility relative to the question of pay?
Mr. Chairman, Regent Johnstone, yes. And I'll give you an example, though, because it's kind of a conditioned yes. This time around, part of the reason that we normally, we would probably have three-quarters of our bargaining agreement settled if the raise was implemented last October rather than this January. So oftentimes, the closer you get to the raise, then the bargaining starts to speed up because people don't want the raise delayed. This time around, there is strong concern in all 25 bargaining units, as there is on management's part, that the implementation in January maybe even fear on the part of some organizations that could become the new implementation date because it isn't always October. It used to be July. And then in 1994, it slipped to October, and now this time around, it's January. So we are in our bargaining. It's a little bit protracted because there are some agents who have been pretty assertive about how January is not going to be acceptable to them. But you know, that's how bargaining works, and in the end, I would predict that we are going to get agreements for January. Sometimes you also then can bargain around the edges of the normal pay increase and see if there's other things you can do. So, for example, in a trades bargaining unit for electricians or plumbers, a provision of the contract that maybe is not used very often is a call-out provision if there's an emergency, and then how much do you pay them in a call-out? Those are the areas that we can still bargain, and that's what we're doing.
But I assume that the economic analysis that's been done by the employees is that their salary increases by money relative to what they would have expected.
Mr. Chairman, Regent Johnstone, that's exactly it. That's the perspective, yes.
Thank you.
Comments or questions? Thank you, Kevin. That was a great conversation.
Additional comments or questions?
Thank you very much. We are now at the point in our agenda where I will call for public comment. Is there any public comment from those on this call or here in the room? Any public comment? Any public comment? Hearing none. We are now about to enter into an executive session. The item on the agenda today requires the board adjourned. Closed because discussion relates to matters of individual privacy. The demands of individual privacy, public disclosure. Now, in the executive session. End this call, and at the end of that meeting, our executive session, the meeting will be adjourned.
Thank you. I know a lot of folks have jumped off, but thank you for joining our call today.
Mr. Chair, this is Royce Ingram. Do you need President Cruzado and me in the executive session since it concerns honorary doctorates, or do you want us to sign off?
There's President Ingram. I've got numbers to call both of you individually on your particular items. So I think it's all set up.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Stand by. We'll call you back.
Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.